Listen, it's the Burt Show.
Her best friend applied for this job, but now she's thinking, yeah, that'd be a pretty cool job. I think I want that job. And now she's contemplating applying for the job herself.
That breaks friend code.
That's what I'm thinking too. All right, so if you want to weigh in, 1-855-BIRCHO, 855-237-8746. All right, this is a short but sweet email, so we don't have a ton of detail, but I do think there's a little bit of morality to debate here. So it just says, good morning, I have an ethical question. One of my tier one friends, and for us, tier one, we're talking, we're in bestie territory here. One of my tier one friends told me about a job she applied for. We both work in the same field, and when she described the job, it sounded amazing. She's a great person, but I honestly don't think she has the qualifications to even get an interview. The more I think about it, the more I'm wanting to apply for this job, and I do have all the qualifications plus more. Is it wrong for me to apply?
I think it's wrong, 1,000%, especially from a tier one friend. I feel like if you were to put a man in this situation instead of a job, right? Like, you could see how foul it would be as a friend. She tells you she's into a guy, and then now you try to step on her toes and get the guy first. I think it's the same way with the job. If anything, I think you let her go through the process, and if maybe they don't hire her and it's still available, then you can jump in afterwards. But to go and compete with her after she told you about the job, I think that's foul as a friend.
This is tough because the state of the economy right now, I know, is pretty brutal, and I know everyone's lucky to have a job right now. And so I think you've got to kind of look at her situation. Is she struggling to find a job? Does she really, really need this position? Or is this just something she's thinking about jumping to? I think there's a possibility that you could talk to her about it. I mean, just say, hey, I know I also think I might be qualified for this job, but if you're happy where you're at, and if this job isn't going to be like some life-changing move for you, I just don't understand why it would be worth it to you unless you felt like you also desperately needed this job for some reason.
Yeah, I feel like you sending the email says everything you need to know about whether or not you think this is ethical. Mm. Because you hit us up. Otherwise, you just would have gone for it, right? Yep. You wouldn't have thought twice about it. But the reason why you're thinking twice about it is because you know you're going to be doing your friend dirty. Like, put yourself, and I think it's always so important, put yourself in your friend's shoes, right? And you tell her about this incredible job that you are so excited about, and you've applied for it, and you're just hoping, wishing, and praying you get it. And then she goes behind your back and applies herself for the job. How are you going to feel? Mm-hmm. Like, not only how are you going to feel, but how are you going to look at her knowing she did that to you when you guys are supposed to be friends?
It's like she sent the email hoping we would be like, girl, go for it. Ain't nothing wrong with that, right?
That one was a pretty easy peasy unanimous decision.
For sure.
All right, Mo, let's do a little Tuesday TED Talk here. And this all has to do with finding inspo at your uncle's funeral.
It was a shocking way to find inspiration at my uncle's funeral, one, and two, with a story that is about cookies. So you can imagine how everybody kind of felt when we have the minister up there and he's crushing it. He's doing a really great job celebrating my uncle. And then he's like, you know, I want to tell you guys a story that I feel like could be life changing about cookies. And we're all sitting there like, bro, what? Like, we're going to talk about cookies at my uncle's funeral?
Did we specify what kind of cookies?
Nope.
He didn't say.
Oh, you think he was going there right? At the funeral?
You wanted me to say, hey, what kind of cookies, though, bro? What are we talking about? I got to know.
If it's oatmeal raisin, I'm not invested. But if it's chocolate chip, then I'm in it to win it.
Is it Oreos? Is it Chips Ahoy? We need details.
No.
So he tells us that he has a friend who is also a minister, and she told him this story, and he was relaying it to us. And he said that one day she bought herself some cookies. It was a long day for her. She was going to get on a flight and she kind of wasn't seeing things as clearly as she would like to have because she was so tired, which in our daily journeys of life, we all go through that. So she buys whatever her favorite cookies are. Right. If I see them again, Kristen, I promise you, I will find out what kind of cookies they were. She puts them in her purse. She goes to get on her flight. She doesn't think anything of it. When they get on the flight, it's three seats. It's empty in the middle. It's a guy on her left. She takes the cookies out and she puts them in like the pouch in the seat, in the back of the seat in front of her. She goes to sleep, doesn't think anything of it. When she wakes up, she doesn't see her cookies anymore, but there is an open pack of cookies, which are the exact same cookies in the middle seat that this guy is now eating from. So her mind is like,
no,
there's no way. Like, there's no way this man reached across, took my cookies out the pouch, opened them, and just started helping himself. But she's like, you know what? She's trying to follow the word and she's saying that God is telling her maybe this man is just that hungry.
No.
or if he's even that crazy enough to do that, I can't beat him up. I'm not going to make a thing of it. So she's kind of people pleasing in this situation. Like, I'm going to just let this man have these cookies because I'm not fighting him over no cookies.
Do not mess with my cookies.
Which is what most, and he, and we're, as he's telling the story, he's like, what would y'all do? And everybody is like, now it's going to be a problem on that flight. It's going to be, it's going to be an issue if you just go taking my cookies.
I'm actually, what would be so, I would be such a tattletale. I would hit the flight attendant button and she would come over and I'd be like, he stole my cookies.
This man, right? So she's like, I'm going to let it go, right? Then he has the audacity to pick them up, reach over, and offer her some. So she's like, the nerve of this man. You're going to offer me my own cookies? So now she's like really in her mind. She thinks she's being pranked at this point. Like, what is going on? But she takes some because she's like, I bought them. Yeah. I'm going to eat some of these cookies, right? So she's eating. She'll eat one. He'll eat one. And they're just kind of going back and forth. And she's just sitting in it like, I can't believe this is happening, but I'm going to let it go. So it gets down to the last cookie. And the guy goes, pretty good, huh? Do you want the last one? Something like that. And she's like, he's going to offer me my last cookie. She's like, you know what? Nah, I don't want to take the last one. It's fine. You can have it. And then he goes, how about we split it? So she's like, sure, sure. I'll split my last cookie. Thanks. That was so kind of you to offer. So she takes the cookie, doesn't even say thank you because she's feeling like, I'm not going to thank you for giving me my own cookies, but whatever. So the flight lands. He gets up, throws the cookies away. He gets up and he starts walking off, says, have a nice day. She kind of looks at him like, yeah, you too, but didn't really give him the energy that he was giving her. So as she gets up to leave, she just starts double checking everything around her to make sure she didn't forget anything. Her cookies were still in there. They fell down. Those were actually his cookies. Aww. She was eating from his cookies the whole time. He was sharing with her, and she had this attitude because in her mind, the perception was that this man was taking from me, but when in reality, he was giving to you. And she just always saw that as like, just a microcosm of life in that a lot of times you really do have a perspective that is so different from the reality of what someone else is experiencing. And the whole time you're thinking that something is happening to you, but it's actually something good happening to you. And you're the issue, but you may not know it because you don't have the proper perspective in life.
It's not happening to you. It's happening for you. Boom. That's a really good Tuesday TED Talk right there.
I thought so too, right?
Listen, it's the Vert Show.
She pulled it off. She faked wedding dress shopping so her mother-in-law wouldn't get mad, even though she had already found the dress. So I love my neighbors. They know me so well. So the other day we were sitting in their backyard having a cocktail and he was like, oh my gosh, I was hanging out with some women at work and they were talking like wedding prepping and wedding stuff like that or whatever. He was like, I was half paying attention. But then they told this story of how one of the women had to pretend to find her wedding dress so her mother-in-law wouldn't get mad. And I'm like, and he goes, I felt like this was right up your all's alley. And I'm like, duh. So give me the deets. So what had happened was this woman that he works with, she went out and she found her dream wedding dress, but she was just by herself, but she knew this was the one. And she didn't think her mom would be that miffed about it, but it's her mother-in-law, right? Yeah. So her soon-to-be mother-in-law, her soon-to-be husband is a big-time daddy's boy. They are a deeply religious family, and so she wants to have involvement in every aspect of the wedding, okay? So she finds the dress and she's like, my future mother-in-law is going to be livid. So she planned another wedding dress shopping experience, right? And got everybody involved. She goes to the shop, right? It tells them the plan, then calls them the day before, making sure everybody's on the same page. And I kid you not, this wedding dress boutique, they're like, oh yeah, girl, we already had a meeting about it. We talked about it in our store meeting today. So everybody pretends like they're meeting her for the first time.
Wow.
Like they're totally in on this. Like she walks in, they're like, hi, you know, nice to meet you. Even though she's literally already purchased her wedding dress from this wedding dress boutique. They're just recreating the moment for her mom and her mother-in-law. So they're like, oh yeah, everybody is in the know. Everybody who works here knows to pretend like they don't know you. And then I go, of course, my first instinct is like, have they done this before? Yes.
Wait, what?
Really?
I don't know if it's common practice, but most definitely wedding boutiques or whomever, they have staged saying yes to the dress, even though the bride has already said yes, as to not to hurt the feelings of the mother or mother-in-law, and they, to make sure they don't feel left out, that they weren't there when the decision was made.
Wow. I mean, I guess there's a sweetness to it that you are so concerned with how your mother-in-law would feel, but it just seems like so much work to do this to me.
But then the dress she picked. So now there's a lot on the line here because she's already bought the dress. So now she's coming out in the dress that she has purchased, that she has already said yes to. So if everybody hates it, you've already bought it, right? Because you have that risk. And sure enough, she comes out and the mother-in-law was not happy with the dress.
Oh. No.
Because it showed too much cleavage and she was worried about what the rabbi was going to think.
Oh, no.
A little too late.
But apparently, she got her dress, whatever, and her mom and her mother-in-law were none the wiser. The wedding dress boutique, like, nailed it, pretended like they just met her and she was saying yes to the dress for the very first time.
Wow.
That's so impressive. And so nice of them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Denisha, welcome to The Burt Show. So, did you fake something throughout the wedding process just so your family would buy it?
No, I didn't, but I was a bridesmaid where the bride did for her mother-in-law.
So, what did she do?
So, she had already picked out the dress, like, months prior to the date that she said that we were going to go dress shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother-in-law did not like her. She was not a fan of her mother-in-law, and she had already picked out the dress. So this was us just going to quote-unquote dress shop, but she already had the dress.
So she just recreated the entire moment in order to keep the peace with her mother-in-law?
Yes, she did. She recreated the entire experience just so that her mother-in-law could feel like she was a part of it.
It was
wild.
Hey, it's diabolical, but it's also altruistic.
Yeah, I guess you're thinking of someone else. And yeah.
And Denisha, does the mother-in-law to this day know?
To my knowledge, I actually don't think that she does because they ended up getting divorced.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the ending.
Well, all that work for nothing.
We had a 50-50 chance. All right, Mandy, thanks so much for joining the Burt Show. Okay, what was recreated for you?
Yes, so my best friend and I, this was before I got married, my best friend and I found my engagement ring accidentally before my husband now proposed to me. And so basically the whole time, I didn't know when he was going to do it, but when he actually proposed, like a few weeks later, I had to act totally surprised. Like I had no clue that my husband was going to propose to me.
Oh, okay.
And
so I thought, sorry, Mandy, I thought you and your girlfriend were out shopping and you found your engagement ring that you knew you wanted to buy. But you're saying no. So where was he hiding it in the house that you found it?
So he was hiding it in my in-laws office in a locked door, and I knew that he never knew that I knew where that key was, and I went in there for something, and I said, oh my gosh, what's in this box? And she was with me, and I opened it, and it was my ring. It was my engagement ring, and I was like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have found this, oh my gosh. And so I had to fake like I knew that, or I had to fake basically me not knowing that he was proposing to me. So when he proposed, I had to act all surprised, like, oh my gosh, I had no clue this was coming. But really, I did. Like, I found the ring. I knew it was coming up. I knew it was coming soon.
Okay, Mandy, I have two questions for you. Okay, so first, what were you doing nosing around in a locked drawer at your in-law's house?
You know what's funny is I don't remember what I was doing.
I bet you don't. Can't remember.
I might have been snooping. Knowing my best friend, who's still my best friend, we might have been snooping for something. I have no clue what I was doing. I'll have to ask her. It was 20 years ago.
You might have been snooping. What's this small ring-sized box in the corner? If only I could open it.
And Mandy, the second question. Are you guys still married?
We are still married, and to this day, he has no clue. He
still doesn't know. Wow.
I know. He does listen to you guys, so I knew that I could call.
Okay.
No clue. He would be so upset. I should have been the voice disguiser.
No, hey, you're in the clear, girl. You're in the clear. We'll let you go. Thank you for sharing.
Thanks. Bye.
I almost wanted to offer her money. to see how much money it would take for her to call her husband and tell her.
Oh, you should have done it.
To tell him, like, hey, I knew all along that you were going to propose because I found the ring before you proposed.
Oh, that would have been good.
Can we get her back? We got her number.
How much money would it take for you to share a secret like that with your husband?
Probably $500.
Well, that's it?
That's it?
You're giving it up for the cheap.
I'm thinking about taxes. You go above $600, then you're going to start like,
at least go $599.
Right. $599.99.
Listen, it's the Burt Show.
Hooters is doing a re-Hooterization. So they're facing potential bankruptcy. And so they're taking a look at all of their restaurants. And they're like, you know what? We need to make these bad boys more family friendly. So it's time.
Who are we referring to with these bad boys? The Hooters?
The Hooters. So yeah. So the company is, they're calling it a re-Hooterization. Mm. And I just love saying the word.
It is an odd word to say.
It just rolls.
It rolls though,
right
off your tongue. Yeah.
Re-Hooterization. So yeah. So according to reports, they're about $3 million in debt. Last year, they closed about 40 locations in the U.S. There's still currently around 250 Hooters across the U.S. So they are going to try to make it more PG. They're not saying specifically what they're doing to make them more, you know, make them more family friendly. They've already had a kids menu for a while, apparently. So I think the only thing we can assume is the outfits might change for the servers. Mm. Bikini nights may be on the way out, but they say a re-Hooterization is on the way.
So it's really more of a de-Hooterization.
Yes.
We're de-Hooterizing it.
Yes.
It makes sense. I remember a time when UFC fights were huge at Hooters, and we would go all the time to watch the fights, but I haven't been to one in over a decade, so they need to do something.
See, if we're doing a re-Hooterization, a de-Hooterization, let's do something about the wings.
You don't like the wings?
I do not.
Really?
They're too breaded. They are heavily, heavily breaded.
That's what I like about them.
Are you serious?
I like Hooters wings. I mean, I wouldn't put them like top five in wings, but it's a different wing than you can get anywhere else, which I guess I appreciated at one point.
That is true. But I feel like the breading to chicken ratio, breading far exceeds the chicken.
It is a lot of breading.
I'm just shocked that you can remember the last time you went to a Hooters. I can't remember the last time I went to a Hooters.
Kaylee's wife, Erin, had her baby shower there.
Are you kidding? Shut up.
That's actually great.
Wait, that's really funny.
We had a vajayjay pinata that was filled with a bunch of mini liquor bottles.
At the baby shower?
Yeah, I like it.
It was pretty epic.
It was.
Yeah. So funny.
So we had a giant table at Hooters, and she wore that one of those t-shirts that has like the fake bikini body airbrushed on it or whatever. And girl, Erin went all out. It was quite fun. But that's the last time I was at a Hooters.
Maybe that should be a part of the de-Hooterization program where they're like, okay, have your baby shower at Hooters.
Mm-hmm. It was a good time. We had a good time. All right, so Mo, your friend said something that triggered you, and it has everything to do with what he said about marriage.
This is true. And it's one of those situations, I kind of let him have it, and I feel bad about it, but I don't at the same time.
Did he deserve it?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, and maybe y'all will help me, because it's one of those things where what he said, and in a moment he said it, I probably would have had a different reaction had I not already been at this point of being fed up and hearing about marriage over and over and over. And I think he got the brunt of what I really wanted to say to a lot of other people, but it was just the icing on the cake when he said it.
All right, so Hal, if you had to give us kind of like an estimate, how many times have people talked to you about marriage, like in the past couple weeks?
So this is the funny thing about it, right? In my life and in being in a relationship now, no one has ever mentioned marriage to me. It never comes up. It was never a thing. And it just seems like the moment that I came on air and said, not so sure about marriage, right? Maybe, maybe not. But it's for me, it's not like at the top of my to-do list. It's not something that if it doesn't happen for me, I would feel like I missed out on anything, because I just feel like marriage is a lot different today than it used to be. If you're looking at numbers, if you're looking at certain things, I'm not pressed, right? If my lady gets to a point of like, I really want this and need this, then maybe I'd reconsider. But it just seems like ever since I said that, now everywhere I go, everyone wants to bring up marriage all of a sudden. And it's so annoying, right? Because it's like, I feel like if someone says, for example, hey, I don't want to celebrate a birthday, right? I don't want to have kids. I feel like, especially if a woman says it, it's respected. Like, okay, that's her desires, that's her wishes. Let's all leave it alone.
Oh, y'all never been around my family.
Oh.
They're begging me to have kids. I'm like, I would be the worst mother.
You think so?
Well, oh, sorry. I didn't mean that to be like as aggressive. I thought that was going to be like a ha-ha.
No, I thought
that was going to be like a ha-ha, laugh, funny moment, and then it just got sad.
Did it make you feel bad that none of us were like, oh, no, you would be a great mother, but we all were just like,
You got a point.
You're like, you're not wrong.
Or we should have jumped in a little quicker and been like, no, Abby, you'll be a great mom.
No, I wouldn't, and I'm self-aware enough to know that.
See, and I respect that because that's how I wanted me saying I don't think marriage is for me to be treated. I didn't want everybody to start now. Well, you were marriage. We're marriage. Well, you said you never get married. We're marriage. Like, if I wanted to talk about marriage every day, I would get married. Like, y'all are making it weird now, right? And it got so bad that I started telling my family, like, genuinely, every single one of y'all, my family, my friends, whomever it is, that has brought up marriage to me since I said I didn't want to be married. If I do get married, you're not invited. Like, that's how we're getting it off. And it's to everybody. Like, no one is safe.
I think it comes from a place specifically from women. Typically because, like, ladies want to get married. I think deep down subconsciously, it's a trigger. Because if you've ever been in a relationship with a guy who was afraid of commitment or didn't show you or didn't make you feel secure in the relationship, typically they were avoidant of marriage. So I think when you say you don't want marriage, it sort of subconsciously triggers these women to be like, don't be like that guy that I dated, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago, where he was so afraid of commitment and not making me feel secure. I don't want your lady to feel insecure. Whereas it's not that. You just don't want marriage.
Exactly. Because respectfully, that those sound like personal problems.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to use your triggers to trigger me.
Right. I feel too, people equate marriage with love.
Right.
And that if you're not married, you're not in love. And I know plenty of people who are more happily in love not married than like the other way around. Like, I know plenty of people who are married and not in love.
Right.
And I know plenty of people who are together and not married and very much in love.
And so this is where I'm going with it, right? Where whatever your ideology of marriage is, fine. But it's just, to me, it's as simple as if somebody doesn't want something for their life, let them not want it. That's it. Like, if you say I don't want to go to the store, I'm not going to be in your face every day. What about the store? What about the store? The store? You know, like, what are you doing?
To be fair, have you been to Target?
It's to the point, one of my aunts asked my lady, so do you think he's going to propose to you? How would she know, auntie? How would she know if she's going to get proposed to? Or the people who say to me, how do you think she feels about it? Ask her. I don't know, right? It's like, y'all just now we have to harp on marriage. And at first it wasn't bothering me. It just got to a point of like, all right, y'all are annoying me so much with this that I'm going to snap at some point. And then it happened to be my friend. Mm. And that's why I'm saying he got the, because it was about a month of this, of like everywhere I go, somebody has to make a reference about the fact I don't want to get married. Like it's just nothing else in the world to talk about. And so I'm on the phone with him and then he starts. So, marriage? And I'm like, I think it's so funny that no one ever asks me if I'm happy, right? Like, that's never a question. No one ever sees and goes, yo, I'm so happy for you and your lady. This is the longest relationship I've seen you in, like all of my guys. And they never just go, I'm so happy to see you happy. Or even ask, are you happy? Mm-hmm. It's just marriage, 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 marriage. And then he said, that part didn't trigger me. It was just like, okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. But then he said, don't you feel like you're getting to a point where people will see it as a red flag if you're not married? And I was like, you know what? You're like the fourth guy that I've heard say that at some point in life, it's a trigger if you're not married. And I was like, respectfully, I'm going to say this to you as respectfully as I can. You've been divorced and it didn't go well, bro. Like, it went really bad. It went so bad, in fact, that I listened to you cry on the phone over it for a year and then tell me you would never get married again. And I'm like, for you, of all people, to say that if a man looks at what that happened to you, and if we talk in numbers, the numbers are on my side. They're not on yours. So if you look at all of this, I don't get how a man could ever say to another man, it's a red flag if I learn from your mistakes and decide that I want to go a different route, right? You decided to get married, respectfully again, to someone we all told you, don't marry her. We all told you that, right? We said, don't do it. It's not looking good. You shouldn't go this route. You did it anyway, right? And when you did do it anyway, I didn't go, that's a red flag. Nah, bro, I showed up and said congratulations, period. And that was the end of it, right? So why if I say, yeah, I don't think that's for me. I think I'm going a different direction. Why can't you show up and say the same? Just congratulate me on my journey of happiness and where I want to do in life. Instead, I'm a red flag from learning from mistakes. that didn't make a lot of sense to me. And it was one of those moments when I went, I noticed like at the end, damn, I might have went too hard.
Eased up a little bit.
Yeah, that was a kind of crap. Came from a deep place.
It did.
I've been holding on to that. And I looked at, he was just looking at me like, damn, you read me. And I'm like, hey, my bad, bro. I don't think all of that was for you. Like, I think I'm a little triggered. I'm going to go ahead and go get a drink.
You literally have him questioning every single life choice he has ever friggin' made.
That's exactly what happened. He had tears in his eyes. I was like, oh, man, I'm an exit stage left, man. I didn't mean for that to happen, bro. I love you, man.
So, did you go too hard?
The Burt Show.
Happy April Fool's Day. Yes, it is April 1st, so you're getting a warning here from the Burt Show if you're just now waking up. You better keep your head on a swivel, unlike what Burt did last week when we pranked him. By we, I mean me, but I involved a lot of people in my little... my prank. So yeah, we had Burt believing that he was interviewing Post Malone. It was not Post Malone. It was Burt Show listener Jimmy, who I feel the need to add every single time we talk about this, who is missing a left hand.
Yeah.
It was, as Rebecca put it, faux Malone.
Faux Malone. And when I say we pranked him, Burt interviewed this man for 20 minutes.
Standing right next to him. Man couldn't take his hand out of his pocket the whole interview.
So now we have the full video. So if you want to check out the full video of Burt interviewing fake Post Malone, just go to theburtshow.com or also head to our YouTube page.
Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's the Burt Show's entertainment buzz.
Prince Harry is being accused of harassment and bullying by the chairwoman of the charity he founded back in 2006. This is some drama. And it seems like it's kind of petty drama. So about a year ago, during the Royal Salute Polo Challenge that benefited the charity, there was an incident that involved Meghan Markle, or as I guess we're now calling her Meghan Sussex, Prince Harry, and the chairwoman, Dr. Sophie Chandoka. So in this video, in some of the footage, like at the end when they're holding a trophy, and I believe it was a polo match that was benefiting the charity, they're standing up on the podium and they're all taking photos and they're doing the things. I guess Meghan asked the chairwoman to move aside so she could stand next to her husband, Prince Harry, and it got a ton of backlash from the media. As anything Meghan Markle does, it always gets tons of backlash from the press. So following the event, I guess Prince Harry then requested that the chairwoman publicly defend Meghan against all this criticism, and the chairwoman declined. She said that the charity shouldn't be involved in personal public relations matters. And apparently this disagreement contributed to tons of tensions within the charity, so much so that Prince Harry eventually had to resign from the charity that, again, he co-founded about 20 years ago.
Over literally over a photo?
And
who was standing next to who, and the fact that Meghan wanted to stand next to Harry, which, by the way, if you're doing that, he should stand next to the person, like, this woman is part of, like, they co-founded the charity together?
Yes. Well, no. He co-founded the charity with the Prince of Lesotho, and she is the chairwoman of this charity.
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, I mean, she's going to be in the photos, but I guess Meghan had, like, asked her to stand aside so she could take a photo next to her husband and, like, hold the trophy or whatever. And there was a lot of tension with that because, of course, people are going to pick apart anything Meghan does. Like, of course, she's being a bee, and they're being very highly critical of her. And because she, the chairwoman, didn't stand up for her in public because she didn't think that was appropriate or her place, I guess it led to tons of tensions behind the scenes, so much so that now the chairwoman is accusing him of bullying and harassing her, that he has now had to resign. And there's an investigation from the UK's Charity Commission that's been started.
Yeah, I feel like that's snowballed.
That's a lot for very little.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot. But I mean, if she's saying that this is a pattern from the royals, that there was, I mean, this might have just been one incident that maybe was just her breaking point because it was so public.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about on her behalf. I'm talking on their behalf. Like, if they really did push so hard for her to defend them, and I don't blame her. Like, you don't want to get in personal affairs. Like, sorry, not sorry, but I'm going to, like, I see how the tabloids attack you guys. I wouldn't want any part of it either. Like, you all have a PR team for a reason. So how about you let your PR team take care of that? So for them to be, if this is true, for them allegedly to be so emphatic about getting her to, like, acknowledge it or say it wasn't a big deal, I feel like is odd on their behalf.
At this point, I feel like Meghan Markle needs to recognize that this is just how the press is treating her. Exactly. And I'm not saying it's right, and I'm not saying that the press should be overly critical of her. I'm not justifying that by any means. But I think it comes to a point where I feel like she has gotten so much backlash for whatever reason for the things that she does, that now you've got to arm yourself behind the scenes. Like, if you know the press is going to pick you apart no matter what, how can you equip yourself to be able to handle that kind of stress? Because at the end of the day, now it does appear like they're choosing to be in the public eye. She has this new show with Netflix, and they're doing all these public charity work things. So if you are going to be a public figure, how are you going to be able to handle the stuff that the press is going to throw at you? Okay, on a lighter note, I want to talk about Temptation Island, something that might lead you to lose a couple of brain cells. And there's a storyline with one couple on the show that has just sent me from start to finish. So the way that this couple entered the show was that they started talking about how they met. And it's all having to do with Breon Whitley and his girlfriend, Shantae. And I remember in the first episode, they're like, yeah, we met at church. And we met because I needed financial advice, and he works in the finance division of something. So we ended up getting together, and then long story short, the first night we met, we ended up in bed together. And I remember thinking that was so funny because, like, you know, they met at church, and that's just not what you're expecting.
But this Temptation Island,
but
that's
this guy ends up having a threesome on the show.
Oh.
And he said that when he did it, he didn't regret it, and he ends up leaving Temptation Island with his girlfriend. But after getting so much backlash online, Breon did an interview with TMZ and said, yeah, I would take that back.
I hate that I said I don't regret this. I regret the situation 100%, right? I love the lessons that I've learned from it, but I definitely regret. I hate my reaction afterwards. I truly love Shantae, and it was a bad moment that I had. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I can learn from it. I hope people can learn from it as well.
It was a bad couple of moments, I think.
Yeah. So I just want some clarification to make sure I heard everything accurately. So he had a threesome.
Uh-huh.
And did not leave Temptation with the threesome, but left with her.
With the girlfriend.
And was she involved in the threesome?
She was not involved in the threesome with two of the temptresses.
And then
he doubled down on the show. He said he didn't regret it, right, which is why then he had to backtrack on TMZ and say that he actually regretted it.
Like, he don't regret it. Somebody got in his ear and was like, I need you to go out there and make a different statement than you did the first time.
I need you to learn to regret it.
Exactly.
Wait, hold on one second. I want you to play his audio really quick for me.
The TMZ one?
Yeah.
All right, go for it.
I hate that I said I don't regret this. I regret the situation 100%. Right? I love the lessons that I've learned from it. But I definitely regret. I hate my reaction afterwards. I truly love Shantae.
Stop.
And it was.
No. If you truly love somebody, you don't have a threesome with two random people.
Period.
Okay, that's all I wanted to hear. Thank you.
I know what an apology sounds like when somebody's in your ear telling you how to apologize too.
We're going to end it there. And he might need to reconsider that. For more stories, head to the Burt Show podcast on your favorite listening platform.
The Burt Show.
I'm overthinking something in my head. So when we're about to talk about adult content, should we give a parental warning or should we give a kid warning? Because technically the warning is for parents to protect their kids. We're not giving a kid warning to kids, right?
Yeah, but the warning is for the kids, right? It's not necessarily for the parents.
It's for the parents. Their kids.
I'm just trying to complicate it further.
Well, here is your parental/kid warning, because we're going to be talking about some adult topics, okay?
Technically, this email is a kid warning.
Yes. Yeah. It really honestly is. So we have our Burt Show therapist, Andrea Berkeley, who we're going to bring on here in just a second. But first, Abby, if you can read the Burt Show email we got.
Hi, I recently called in on the segment wishing I had more partners before marriage. Anyways, it got me thinking. I would love advice on how to talk to kids about sex and your thoughts. Coming from a religious family, waiting until marriage was very important. My dad made my sister and I promise rings. It was a whole thing, and I still have issues talking about it and it being a bit taboo. I'm not religious now. I did sleep with my husband before we got married, and I really struggled with guilt with sex even when we were married. I would feel dirty. Even now I struggle with it, and I'm 35 years old. I have kids, ages 5, 3, and 1, and I get anxious on how to talk to them about the future. I don't want to cause the same shame I dealt with around it, but I do appreciate the importance of sex being a big decision and maturity playing a part. Help.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and bring on our therapist, Andrea Berkley. She has a podcast, Sounds Like Therapy, with Andrea Berkley on Burt's Pioneer Network, his podcasting company. So, Andrea, you hear this. What advice do you have for our Burt Show listener?
First of all, I just want you to know that I am so thrilled to be answering this question because I was a former Baptist youth group girl, and I grew up in the same time where Britney Spears was on television, and then I was also having a purity ring. So, like, I get where you're coming from. So there are three things that you're going to want to focus on with your kids if you want to make sure that they take sex seriously but they don't feel shame. Mm-hmm. First, right now, when they're young, start explaining that sex is for procreation. So that's really what it's for. We are mammals first and foremost, and we have sex so that we can have babies. And the more that you start to talk about that now, when they're young, the less squeamish you're going to feel when you talk about the more difficult concepts later. So whenever I think about this, I just think you want to repeat again and again, your body is doing exactly what it is supposed to do. And as you get older, you're going to start to feel these feelings in your body, and it's exactly right. So your body is good. It's doing what it's supposed to do. It's going to drive you towards members of the opposite sex or the same sex, but you're going to feel all these feelings in your body, and your body is doing what it's supposed to do, which is to try to propel you to make babies.
Mo and Abby, do you remember anything about the talk you received from one of your parents?
I never got the talk. It was very quick. I remember my dad saying something to the extent of protect yourself. And if you're unsure, protect yourself more. I think that was the entire talk.
What does that mean?
I don't know to this day.
Hazmat suit?
I never got that. That's all he told me.
For me, I learned about it at the lunch table because somebody made a dirty joke and I didn't get it. And I was like, can you explain what the joke means? And
oh, you actually asked for an explanation of the joke?
I was confused because somebody made a joke about like eggs. And I was like, what? Sorry, what do you mean? And so my friend had to explain it to me. And I just remember leaving the lunchroom totally traumatized. I'd be like, that doesn't seem right. Like, I don't think people should do that.
I wonder, Andrea, if parents do, you kind of, it's this weird balance because you do want your kids to wait to an appropriate age, but you also don't want them to feel shame over something that's completely natural. So you're kind of like in this between a rock and a hard place of like, I don't want to encourage them to do it, but I also don't want them to have shame in doing it as well.
Yes, I know. And I think sometimes we think if we hold back this information, then they're not going to do it. Mm. But actually the more information that they have, the less likely they are to do it lightly. So just remember, for all the parents listening right now, if you feel awkward about having this conversation, that's okay. You can say, I feel awkward about this, but start with the basics so that it's not what we all experienced, finding out about what sex is from somebody else. I promise they're learning about it a lot earlier than you think they are.
Yeah, like Abby and her joke about eggs at the lunch table.
I think it was fifth grade.
That is early.
And then, Andrea, this is probably a loaded question because I think kids, it's not an age, it's a maturity thing. But when should these conversations start to happen?
I'm telling you, with a five-year-old, you should be talking about what sex is. There is a great book called It's Not the Stork. And listen, we want to start introducing our kids to their bodies. These body parts are not bad. The more we talk about it, the less shame there will be around it. And that preps you for the later parts of the conversation, which are around sex involves bonding. So first we talk about procreation, then we talk about bonding. And this is, again, related to the survival of our species. So we have hormones inside of us that, especially for women, when you have sex, they encourage bonding. For men, you have different hormones, and
sex could encourage bonding if there's an emotional connection first. But if there's not, that bonding is not necessarily going to happen. And so what we want to understand is that our bodies give us these messages to bond, because if you do end up with a baby, you need to make sure that you, for women, that we're obviously invested, like the ship has sailed, but for men, ideally, that they stick around and that they become kind of, it's actually territorial around the woman that they're with. So we first talk about procreation, then bonding, and then this is the one that's going to get everybody. Guys, it's awkward. It's so awkward. But as your kids get older, you talk about sex involving pleasure. And when you talk about what sex can be, that is not just something that anybody can do, right? I mean, anybody can do it, but not anybody can enjoy it and make it enjoyable. That pleasure is rooted in safety and trust, emotional connection, and the ability to communicate about what you want. And so when you've got a 12 or 13 year old and they're like, ew, it's like, yeah, you're not ready for that stuff. You're not ready for that stuff. And, you know, when you talk about it, it needs to be something that's going to be really good. They go, I don't want to do that, like, willy-nilly with anybody, you know?
Mm-hmm. And, Andrea, I mean this as a true compliment. I feel like I just got the sex talk from a parent. So I'm sitting here like, yeah.
I've been waiting all these years for it. There you go.
Finally.
Yes.
In your 30s, you finally got the sex talk from Andrea Berkeley.
Yes, I feel the same way. I'm only getting used to this, like this listener, in my 40s. It's so awkward, but we all deserve to feel comfortable talking about sex, even late in life.
Yeah. And I think from a parent to parent, a little tip, when you know you're going to have these conversations and you prep adequately for them, just make sure you have a bottle of your favorite wine or favorite liquor to be able to have a drink afterwards, because you might need one.
You might, and just own it. Let them know this is awkward, but I want to be awkward with you so that you don't feel awkward as an adult the way that I do.
All right. Thank you again, Andrea Berkeley. Her podcast Sounds Like Therapy with Andrea Berkeley. Thank you so much for joining us on vacation, nonetheless. That was so sweet of you.
So welcome. I'll be here anytime you guys need me.
All right. It's The Burt Show.
The Burt Show.